Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in since they going back to showing Action Tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the Anime Action Fan Sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your prom-tom host, Thomas Prom-Tom Mattis. And this is episode 57 of The Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. Because I haven't let you know where you're listening from this yet. You know, for the kids. After that mindless ramble, like I said, it's episode 57, and of course we just recently finished up Superhero Month, and so it's an all-new month, and no theme for the month. Basically did two theme months in a row, kind of by coincidence, because, again, virus knocking computer out for a month, wanting to finish Disney Month, and then falling right into Superhero Month. So, yeah, nothing planned, and, well, when I was thinking about things I want to do on my sort of non-themed month, the anime that we will be reviewing tonight is one of the ones I wanted to watch. And of course, I was able to get my hands, borrow a friend's copy of the English version. Which I've returned to, but yeah, love listening to the English version of this. It's also a reason I wanted to review it this week, is because this anime, its second season is coming out. You know, the new anime season has started. It's about 4-5 episodes in now, 4 episodes, I believe like the 5th episode of the new season for this anime that we're reviewing tonight is coming out this Friday as of this recording, which is Thursday, May 2nd. But the second season, which is entitled Samurai Brides, is out on Crunchyroll, and so with that happening, you know, I thought it'd be a good chance to go back and look at the first season, which just happened to be, in my mind, one of the best animes of 2010. I'm, of course, talking about Ayaka Ryuran Samurai Girls. There was a lot of praise to go for this series for many reasons. Of course, number one being the art. Artistic-wise, this anime probably stood out among all of the anime that came out in 2010 because of its art. And you know, again, we go back to the year 2010. It's just a wonderful year for anime. So many animes came out of all different genres that were really good. I mean, really good. I mean, you had second seasons. And I can't believe I'm saying this. The only thing that was a letdown was the second season of Big Windup. And that's not because it's bad. It's good. It's just, it just matched what the first season did. And when you compare it to the rest of the stuff that came out where it was improvements over past seasons because they were unfortunately were bad and stuff like that, you know, it's sort of by default, like, well, it's just as good as the first season, which is great, but because there's no improvement there, you know, it's the worst of the second season, you know, which kind of doesn't make any sense, but it might to some, but new animes, the second seasons, everything, so much stuff that came out in 2010, Hero Man, Star Driver, Oremo, Samurai Girls, High School of the Dead, the second season of Sekiri, second season of Big Windup, Giant Killings, Durarara came out, which, God, we love that. Edman Wonderland came out the next year. I'm trying to think what. I know there's a. Beta. Gata. Yama's First Time, as it's now known in America, which is a sort of dark romantic comedy, which I do plan on reviewing one day, came out at this time. The fourth season of Ikitosen, which was actually very good, but it also came out the same time as some other stuff, including a series I reviewed earlier, I believe, this year. In the fall last year, I think. Or maybe I reviewed it like around this time last year, but Ichino Demon Same. Probably getting the name completely wrong, and I'd have to look it up. But yeah, all this stuff came out in 2010. And you would think, well, if it was such a good anime, you'd remember the name. But, you know, it's one of those things to where there's so much, and then just having to bring it off the top of your head. The final season of Nodame Cantabile, Nodame Peri, came out in 2010 as well. Just so, of so many different genres and so many good anime that came out. Occult Academy, you know, again, as you know, I continue talking, I think about more of it. All of this stuff came out in 2010. And all of it is great anime that could be on Toonami. I mean, that's how good most of this anime is that it could be on Toonami and be successful. Of course, plays an exception for sports anime, where even though I think they could, let's be honest, they're never going to put a sports anime on Toonami, as no matter how much I want it. That being said, but you had all these different animes that were good for story and everything, and not the Samurai Girl story, as we'll get to in a review, is bad. Not that the music bad, but the showcase of Samurai Girl that really made it stood out and really made it people watch it was its art style. An art style that people have sort of compared with sort of Super Street Fighter 4, among other things. And sort of the classic Japanese sort of art style that's influenced by that really made it stand out. You know, as I'll talk about with art style, just even the censored version, which again, we'll talk about. It's just, all these animes came out in 2010, and in my view, Samurai Girls was one of the best, and it stood out for many reasons, but like I said, number one being the art. Quite frankly, I think Samurai Girls had the best art style of any anime in 2010, and that is saying a lot. There were so many great art styles in 2010. All these reasons are why I really believe 2010 was the year where anime rebounded as far as great quality anime with great quality stories, art, great music. And I think 10 years from now, we're going to look, or in this case, 7 years from now, when we hit 2020, we're going to be looking back at 2010 as something that saved anime in Japan and quite possibly saved anime in America, because I think we'll be looking back and seeing so many shows that came from that year coming here. And like I said, Samurai Girls is one of those. And, you know, getting to listen to the English dub now, there's an extra thing added onto it, and that is that it's sort of a classic sort of ADV style dub, which makes sense. Another interesting thing to note about this series, and we're going to talk about this more when we get to acting, is that if you look at the English dub and look at the English names, you'd be like, who the hell are these people? But if you use Wikipedia, or more importantly, if you actually listen to the English dub and, like, listen, like, wait a minute, I've heard these people before, and it turns out did, because the names on the box, the name in the credits, are not the their real names. They're voice actors using alternative names, and my only guess, my prime suspect to why this was done, why you had well-known voice actors using different names, was this was during the time where, you know, Sentai Filmworks, who's the licensor of the English dub, was going through legal troubles with Funimation and trying to prove that they were a different group from ADV, and so they didn't owe Funimation any money. Or at least that's my prime line of thinking. And there's so many unique things about this series. Yeah, but I'm getting so ahead of myself. I'm just here talking, gushing at this point about, I love this series so much, and I've not even gotten to the review yet, and I really do, because there's a lot of great stuff to talk about. So with that being said, let's get into our synopsis. Hayaka Ryoran Samurai Girls takes place in an alternative version of Japan called Great Japan, where the Tokugawa Shogunate, take me a couple times to say it right, remains active and has remained isolated from the rest of the world. The story takes place at Buyo Academy School, an academy located at the base of Mount Fuji where children of military families train to become samurai warriors. The academy is in the middle of a power struggle between Yukimura Sanada and Mitabe Goto of the Tomiyotimi faction, and the powerful student council that rules the school. When Mune Akira Yagyu, the new current owner of the Yagyu Dojo, arrives at Buyo Academy to investigate the spirited way of several students, he's pulled into the conflict and then finds himself seeing a girl fall from the sky in a light into his arms. This mysterious girl is Jubi Yagyu, and she kisses him and becomes his master samurai, as he is her general. From there, Mukinura and Jubilee, along with many others, go on a journey to save Great Japan from the shadow that threatens to devour it. This is Hayaka Ryoran Samurai Girls. And welcome back, and let's get it started with music as we usually do. Now, the first thing we're going to talk about is the opening and closing themes. Here, we're going to talk about the music in the series in just a little bit. But, you know, I love the opening and closing themes. God, the opening theme here is Last Vision for the Last by Phelan. And the ending theme is Kore ni Sesi Toriyase by Oeyuki Miniko Kotobuki and Rei Kuyama, who were the Japanese voice actors for Jubei Yagyu, Sen Tokugawa, and Yukimura Sanada. But, you know, with the opening theme, I love this. God, this opening theme is awesome. The sultry, sexy sort of seriousness of the song just that gets you up and just gets you hyped and excited for the show. I mean, not only does the sort of sultry sexiness of the melody and everything sort of match sort of the sultry sexiness of the girls on screen, because again, this is a edgy harem action anime, though everybody forgets the action part. Again, we'll talk about that later. But it also sort of matches the sort of sultry sexiness, stylistic aspect of it, and sort of the sultry sexy art that you see on screen. It's sort of that's, again, in that sort of Japanese artistic style. It's just a wonderful opening. I love listening to it. It just matches exactly sort of the necessary feel for the series. I personally enjoy it. And then you have the closing theme, which, again, sung by some of the Japanese voice actors, and it's this very sort of poppy, sort of the character singing this nice song. It's really wonderful, and it's sort of a great ending theme. And again, the ending animation here is, it's sort of a super deformed Jubilee is sort of walking through the ending credits. She starts out sort of strolling, then walking, and then is running as the song picks up tempo, and it's sort of this Japanese sound to it, the Japanese sort of pop sound, mind you, and sort of nude versions of the girls are going by on the screen. Yes, there's a lot of nudity in this anime. I am an ecchi fan. If you did not know that before, hi, I'm Thomas Mattis. Obviously, you're only meeting me for the first time. But anyways, but it's just this great song, and it's very catchy. Mind you, in the ending credits, there's this little point where there's this little fun little comedic bit where, like, they're sitting in the dojo, and different things happen at that point, which I find hilarious, and I really enjoy looking forward to in the anime. But again, just a very poppy song that, you know, does its best to sort of bring you down from the excitement of each episode. It's just a joy to listen to. I find myself watching both the opening and the ending. I never fast forward through it. Because it gets me hyped for the episode, and of course the ending theme, while bringing me down, also gets me hyped for the next episode. So it does exactly what it's supposed to do. And then you have the music in the series. The music in the series is, it's not average, it's very good. Especially in some of the later episodes, I really enjoyed sort of the, not so much grandeur, but the more heroics within sort of the music being played. The sort of the heroic theme, especially in episode 12, I really, really enjoy. And there's themes here and there that I enjoy, sort of Gisa's theme, especially when she's acting sultry to Minore Akira, excuse me. I'm gonna get these names right. Is very funny and very enjoyable. Jubilee's theme is very enjoyable. It's something to where I think I would find myself buying the soundtrack, I probably would have bought the soundtrack, though, more for its opening and closing theme. But there are songs on there that I enjoy. You know, overall, the music does a great job of... It is more of the sort of Japanese style. To where there's a lot of sort of quiet scenes. Music is not used that much to enhance the scenes. But when it's there, it does stay mostly in the background. And while good... And in a couple times, very enjoyable to listen to, it doesn't take away, it doesn't announce its presence, and it lets the action on screen and the story on screen be the full star. So just a very, very well done soundtrack. I enjoyed really how they executed the soundtrack. And like I said, it is something I would buy. And while I think mostly I'd be buying it for its opening and closing theme, there are a couple of pieces here and there that I gladly listen to again because they are very enjoyable. With that, let's move on to really what is the strength and probably the biggest talking point of this anime, the animation. And again, our first point is the overall art style. And again, like I said, it's so unique and quite frankly, it is the best anime art style of 2010. The art style is very reminiscent of the sort of same sort of Japanese brush art style that you saw in Street Fighter 4 and Super Street Fighter 4. Just the brush and sort of the use of sort of ink. You know, it's not so much that there are colors in this series as much as it's ink in certain points. I mean, there's colors and that stuff, but it's there's a sort of an ink drawing style to it. You know, very thick line work that's to really sort of match sort of the feel of it being very hand-drawn with ink or brushes even. You know, and sort of the action, instead of sort of power waves and CG elements, you know, the use of sort of brush strokes and quick sort of dashes of ink and everything to denote action. It's just incredible. It blows your mind. One aspect of this, and again, this goes more into special effects, but, you know, there's a scene where it's raining, but it doesn't look necessarily like... It looks like rain, but not necessarily, at the same time, rain. It looks like, I guess, a rainstorm of ink. So it looks like rain, but it also looks like a bunch of ink that's falling, and there are droplets of ink everywhere, and just, you know, when, like, there's wind going, there's ink spots going against the camera. Oh my god, it's just incredible. The way they use this style is just absolutely amazing. It is one of the most unique things you will ever see. You know, and even the censoring. You know, again, like I said, this is a very etchy anime. There's a lot of nudity. And this is one of those few... And they actually had a lot of these in 2010 where I loved the... You know, Cat Planet Cuties. I thought of another one that came out in 2010. That also came out in 2010. And, you know, you heard me rave how I love the censoring in this. But this, bar none, had the best censoring. Just, you know, when, you know, there was nudity... It was this very organic feel to where, you know, of sort of ink drips that would appear on the screen, and sort of the nudity would be censored by the ink drips. And there was just such an organic feel to the censoring. It never felt like censoring. It felt like a normal, which is the most incredible thing I ever saw. Because they just, you know, freezing, you know, which I somewhat enjoy. I will probably end up buying it just because I want to see the uncensored version, because quite frankly, if you watched Freezing, which is an anime that came out in 2011, that's an ecchi series, but if you watched it on Hulu or even Funimation online, they have the censoring, and there are times where goddamn half the screen is blocked out, and for some of those times, it's just all that's being shown is panties. Somebody really needs to get a life. That being said, you know, here is this, again, I've never seen censoring that felt so organic to the series. I'll be honest, I will gladly watch the censored anime. This is one of those animes where I wish they would have both the sort of TV censored version and the uncensored version on the Blu-ray. I wish there was an option. I'm sure there isn't. But I really wish there was. It's incredible the way they use sort of the ink, sort of Japanese brush style here. Everything looks like it's hand-drawn. It looks like it's on, and more importantly, the entire anime looks like it's been drawn on sort of Japanese scroll paper, and I'm sure a lot of this is filters done through CG, but still, wow. Just absolutely amazing. You watch this anime, the art style will absolutely blow your mind. It shows you that there's still inventive ways to do hand-drawn animation, even with computers. It gives you hope for the future for animation, to be quite honest. It's just absolutely incredible. The character designs, you know, again, in this case, because it, really the art is special, and they focus so much on the art, what they do right as well is that they do everything else to the best of their abilities. They know they're a harem anime. They're not trying to recreate the wheel, but they're trying to do what they know what to do. They use the right sort of character models here, and they do them to the best of their ability, and they let sort of the story of the characters make you like the designs more and more. Overall, I love the designs. You know, with Jubilee, I love her sort of pink colors. And they match both her forms. You know, she has a more serious form, sort of more free form, as we'll talk about a little bit later. And then, you know, when she's not in Master Samurai form, she's sort of another personality. It's more cheerful and everything. And sort of the pink coloring there really matches. And I love, again, the fabric. Oh, my God. And I'm not talking about, like, dough fabric at all, but just, like, the detail on the fabric is just amazing. And just sort of this almost cotton sweater feel to her outfit, her garment. And it's just a wonderful design. Sonata, very unique. Just different things, sort of the, within each of the character designs, sort of the combination of old and new, the sort of the modern dress with the sort of old dress, you know, Sonata being sort of in, especially with his Master Samurai form, a kimono with a sort of almost white school swimsuit underneath. As I go back up to look at the characters here, Sen Tokugawa with sort of the schoolgirl. It's the schoolgirl outfit, but the schoolgirl outfit is very almost samurai-esque. Goto, you know, again, sort of schoolgirl feel to her. Hanzo Hattori, sort of the mixture of sort of the French maid ninja aspect. Very unique aspects with the characters here. In their character designs, the outfits chosen for really, I think, really denote the personality and match the personalities of each character. And, you know, best of all is the main protagonist. They really went out of their way to really do a good job of doing a design for a male protagonist that really felt different from other harem and ecchi animes, personally. Even in his story, he felt a little bit more unique. And this is something that really separates this ecchi slash harem anime from the rest of the pack. You know, because again, there is the typical sort of character design and story style for a lot of harem animes, a lot of them sort of copying Ken Akamatsu, to be quite honest. But this really does something different, really steps out of the way. There's a sort of very there is a general feel. And I don't mean like he's just general. I mean like as in a sort of war general feel to his character design. There's the black coloring works to do a wonderful job with enabling this presence of this sort of commander. You know, even when he's being pushed around by the girls, there is this, it's almost this sort of young commander feel to him. As though he's this great commander, but because of his youth, he doesn't know what, everything to do. But happens to make the right choices at the time. With the, you know, even the villains, you know, the sort of sultry sexiness of Giza was, I really enjoyed. And the mysteriousness of, Yoshihiko, Tokugawa. There is this darkness to him that you feel that even though he's neutral, and so you, that darkness really lures yourself into the mystery of, he's really the bad guy, or is he not? And then Charles D'Artagnan, just, again, that mixture of old with new, of this sort of the same time period of sort of the Japanese shogunate, but again, that same sort of musketeer feel to her design that I really enjoy, and I love the vertical stripes on her outfit. I love the hat, I love the big feather, the blonde hair in her design. It's just absolutely wonderful. It leads to, again, being an ecchi fan, you know, oh, well, I hope this girl becomes part of his harem. Unfortunately, she doesn't. I guess there's always hope in samurai brides. I'm still waiting for the double-decker bus of butt-naked cheerleaders stop in front of my house, and that hasn't happened yet. I'm very twisted inside. Again, if you didn't know that, this must be your first time listening to the podcast. Hi, I'm Thomas Mattis, your host. Anyways, but back to art. The character design's overall just absolutely wonderful. Then you have the action sequences. And again, like I said sort of before, you know, everybody sort of knows the harem and the ecchi aspect of this anime, if they do know the anime. But again, because of the way ecchi and harem are treated, everybody doesn't count on the action. Again, the action art is just absolutely incredible. It's one of those things where, you know, I'm going to sort of attack the action sequences, as I say, two-prong. Because there's two aspects of it. There is the sort of special effects, the brush style that's being used. But then there's the actual choreography. And the actual choreography is absolutely incredible. It's wonderful. It's amazing. And all you have to do is sort of watch that first fight between Jubilee and Hanzo. And there's a very organic feel to each attack and the way they attack each other. And pretty much throughout the series, there is that feel. And, I mean, there's also some where they're just, like, throwing big moves after big move. But, more importantly, there is this very, you know, sort of technical combatant feel to it. You know, everything has a great organic feel to the choreography of the action sequences. It feels like real battle, like real techniques. It feels like real battle strategy being going on, because not all the fighters are just straight-up fighters. Again, Sonata being more of a strategist. And each character has their own unique thing that they're good at. And, again, showcasing each of those aspects to them to the best of the anime's ability, which I think it really succeeded at. And then you have the aspect of sort of the special effects, the use of the sort of the brush to where, like, there's a swipe of ink across the screen sort of denote a slash and things like that. It's just, oh my god, it makes it so unique and wonderful. The action fights are just incredible to watch. If there was one thing I had to denote on with the action is that sometimes they get a little bit too wild with those ink splashes, and it sometimes get in the way and can get a bit annoying, but it really doesn't hinder it that much. It's absolutely incredible. The action in this series is wonderful to watch. And then we have backgrounds and special effects, and I've sort of already talked about special effects, because quite frankly, sort of the ink and that stuff being used is the special effects. But you have the backgrounds. The backgrounds are gorgeous. And there's the main background here is the academy. But again, it's up on this sort of mountain. There's Mount Fuji in the background. And the thing that really makes these backgrounds wonderful is, again, matching that sort of classic Japanese brush art style of the background. You know, again, the screen feels like the anime's been drawn on sort of classic sort of Japanese scroll paper. And then sort of the ink in the background, it's just the use of watercolors. Oh my god, this is effing incredible. It is gorgeous. I can't say enough about the backgrounds. They're beautiful and they really do a great job to enhance the feel of the location within the anime. Before I go with art, you know, I just can't gush enough about it. All these reasons are why it's the best art style of 2010. And Samurai Brides is doing its best to capture it as well. Again, we're going to talk about Samurai Brides, excuse me, later. I'll get the word right sooner or later. Once again, if this is your first time listening to the show, hi, I'm your host, Thomas Mattis. I mess up words constantly. and I will not be happy until I run that joke into the ground. But in all honesty, it's one of those things to where the art is just absolutely incredible and it's just mind-blowing. I said it gave me hope for the future because it's like, this is proof that great art can still be done in anime. It doesn't have to be one style. There is an area for artists to be unique and to be free and to try different things, all within using computers. It's absolutely incredible, and they just, bar none, this is the best aspect of the anime. And it's, again, the music is very good. The acting, as we'll be talking about in a little bit, is very good. You know, after the break, we'll be talking about it. But the acting and the story are all good and have their own unique aspect. But above all else, what separates this show from anything else is its art. It's just an incredible show that I'll gladly watch just for this art style. With that being said, I think it's time for a quick break for us to calm down. You know, we need a little cooler. We need the, you know, Team Tons of Funk and the Funkadaticals to have a sort of 6 or 8 person intergender tag match with Team Roll Scholars and the Bella Twins. And that reference was just for you, Maddie J. And Gene. But we're going to have some cool down. I'm going to play some promos so we can, you know, relax, you know, get a drink, go to the bathroom, everything. And when we come back, we're going to get into acting and story. So I'll be right back, folks.
In the decade of the 1930s, even the great city of Cleveland, Ohio, was not spared the ravages of the Great Depression. In a time of fear and confusion, a character emerged that would entertain and inspire millions of children and adults alike. He began not as flesh and blood, but as a simple line drawing. His comic book adventures thrilled millions around the world. The magic of radio gave to his name a breathless signature and sound. Then with television came a whole new generation to idolize his exploits. In the 70s, the world believed a man could fly. In the 80s, he was reborn in the comics, and the 90s saw his death, rebirth, and marriage. In the 21st century, he returned to the big screen and saw his origin changed and retold on several occasions. Through the decades, he has gone by many names. The Man of Tomorrow. The Last Son of Krypton. The Man of Steel. His strength is incredible. His name is legendary. His battle is never ending. Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound. My name is Michael Bailey, and I host an internet radio show called Views from the Long Box. Superman is my favorite character of all time, and in 2013, he is turning 75. Because of this, a large portion of the episodes this year will be about the Man of Steel in a series I'm calling
Superman at 75, the celebration of a legend.
I'm going to mark Superman's birthday in fine style by examining all aspects of the character's history, from the comics, to the movies, to the television series, and beyond, both alone and with the best and brightest of the podcasting world. It may not be every episode, but the bulk of Views in 2013 will be all about the Man of Steel. He is the first and greatest superhero of them all, and he deserves no less.
Superman at 75. The celebration of a legend.
A series within a series, and the biggest birthday card a fan can give his favorite hero. Only at Views from the Long Box. Views from the Long Box is a Fortress of Baileytude production. New episodes drop every other Tuesday over at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com, and for this series, over at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
ChefPlus.com.
Okay, let's get this show on the road, gang.
I'm Batman.
This looks like a job for Superman.
Monthly Mondays, available the third Monday of every month at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.
And welcome back, and I hope you enjoyed the break. I hope you got drinks, refreshments, went to the bathroom, please don't tell me about it, or just an overall enjoyed our commercials. Let's get right back into the review. As we usually do, we go into acting right after the break. Of course, protagonist and antagonist, and of course, this is where I talk about the cast list. And you know, as I said before, at the beginning of the show, you actually have a lot of well-known actors here, a lot of former ADV and actors who, as you say, work for ADV and also work for Funimation. But on this series, a lot of them used pen names and alternate names, which actors and musicians and stuff use that for many different reasons. In this case, I think it was because of the legal battles currently going on between, at the time, Sentai Filmworks, formerly known as ADV, and Funimation, or at least at the time. I think it's still going on, but I think it's pretty obvious that that's not going anywhere. It's lawyers. Like, we're still employed. But that's besides the point. By the way, I applaud Sentai Filmworks for the way let's be honest, they got out of paying Funimation and all the gutless relentless parasites that were trying to finish them off when ADV's partner left them high and dry because they didn't want to do anime anymore. Yeah. I applaud anything they did. And that's just a personal opinion. Because, frankly, they didn't deserve what happened to them. It was gutless. It was heartless. It had nothing to do with business. It had to do with people in Japan being what people in Japan, or should I say, businessmen in Japan are, just flat-out lazy cowards. Because they weren't getting the returns they needed. You know, they just said, oh, we're just going to drop everything and leave. And everybody at ADV, I commend them because they've done a terrific job rebounding it and really are one of the best in the business still. But now that I've gotten sort of my political thing off my chest, let's go over to the cast list of Samurai Girls. David Matergega, under the pen name of Ben Wabal, voices Mokanira Akira Yagyu. Emily Knives, under the pen name of Marie LeBlanc, and I love the nod to Mr. LeBlanc there. I think a lot of these names are like nods to different things, and I don't know what all of them are, but I like some to voice actors, some to like, there's one I think it's to an athlete. In this case, I think it's to Marie, it's Marie LeBlanc, you know, sort of a nod to the voice actor who voices, you know, Brain, very well known. But she does the voice of Jubilee Yagyu. Lucy Christian, under the pen name of Tabitha Hickey, which I think is a nod to another voice actor, voices Sen Tokugawa. Hilary Hagg as Mina Jietoi, voices Yukimura Sanada. Shelley Colleen Black voices Aline Dover, or should I say under the pen name Aline Dover. I have all these names on the list and they're very confusing at some point. But she voices Matabe Goto. Maggie Fleckno, under the pen name of Ophelia Cox, which again I think is also another nod to another very well known voice actor, voices Hanzo Hattori. Rosie Curtis, under the pen name of Vestal V, voices Kanetsugi Naoi. Melissa Davis, under the pen name of Tessera Crowd, voices Gisen Yagyu. Lirado Azulda, who you probably best know as the main protagonist in High School of the Dead, voices Ian, or I should say, under the pen name of Ian Schichtarhart. The pen names are harder to pronounce than the Japanese. I've gotten to a great point in my pronunciation life. voices Yasuhiko Tokugawa. And Shannon Emmerich, under the pen name of Lisa Walbach, which I think is actually a nod to a very popular female athlete that or female soccer athlete that is part of Team USA, or was part of Team USA, I should say, voices Charles D'Artagnan. And again, I don't know if they're nods or not. My guess is that some of these are nods, the pen names are. But that is your cast list. So now that we've gotten that difficult, confusing thing out of the way, I love the voice acting in this series, bar none. Both protagonist and antagonist, I love it. They do a wonderful job. David brings a sort of command to his voice, yet a sort of calmness to the character that really makes you believe in sort of this very unique male harem prototype. Prototype's the wrong word here. It's another P word that I'm blanking on, but he's not your typical male harem lead. In the English version, a lot of that also comes from the voice. Great job of capturing those unique notes within the character that really made him unique. Emily Knives, or Neves, excuse me. I apologize if I'm mispronouncing it. I really love the fact that she was able to accomplish these two different voices and give each one of those voices unique personalities in representing Jubilee Yagyu, because, again, in the series, she sort of has split personality. When she becomes a master samurai, she's one personality, which is actually the complete personality as it's revealed in the story. But when she's not, she's sort of this very innocent, very bubbly personality, of this sort of incomplete personality. And Emily did a great job in really providing unique notes and tones and a great aspect of believability to each of these characters that she brought to life within the same character, that is. Lucy Christian, who one of the top female voice actors in my mind in the voice acting business, great job as Sen Tokugawa. And mind you, her and Hiller do a great job as Sen Tokugawa, Yukimura, Sonata. They work so well off each other. This is why I'm talking about them both in the same time here. Just great time with each other. I would love to hear sort of the voice. Because as somebody who's followed voice actors as I do and know the stories, you know, especially among friends working for the same company, you know that voice actors, when they know a friend's going to be in after them, will leave them little notes. Like they're like 3 seconds after the supposed cut is supposed to happen, or right before the cut is supposed to happen. And my God, the bloopers, oh my God, I would pay to see them, especially between Hilary Hagg and Lucy Christian, the things they probably left each other. But just, they worked so well off each other and did a wonderful job in acting. These two were actually the first notice I had that, wait a minute, these names don't seem right, because, again, I heard Hilary and I heard Lucy, and I knew it was them. I'm like, oh my God, it's Lucy Christian, Hilary Hagg. And then I see the credits, and it's the pen names, and I'm like, who the hell are these? Okay, no, 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 no. Those aren't the names. They have, I knew right away they had to be pen names. I was like, that's freaking Lucy Christian. I have heard enough of Lucy Christian to know Lucy Christian's voice. And the same goes for Hilary Hagg. And if I'm pronouncing that last name wrong, I apologize. It's just, I know these voice actors. I've heard them so many times. They're very distinctive. That's them. And as it would turn out, as I find out later, it was. Shelley Colleen Black did a great job as Goto. Bringing both a seriousness and a great sort of comedic performance to the role. A very motherly aspect to the character as well that I really enjoyed. I think it's part of the appeal of that character to me. Maggie Flickno, another great, very unique personality to Hanzo. I think really captured the personality of Hanzo as this sort of best friend of Sen Tokugawa perfectly. Rosie Curtis was just great. She was basically the comedy relief. The sort of, and mind you, I know that say this again, watching the second season, knowing that Kenetsu has a more important role in the series. But for the parts that she was in this series, very much more of a comedic role. I always love people who do a good job with the comedic roles, and she did a good job with this one. Then, to an extent, you have the antagonists, which are the last three. Melissa Davis, just the sensuality she brought with Gensen, or Gisen, I should say. I really enjoyed, really captured that character, really made it a unique character, her own character. Thought she did a great job with that. Leonardo, as Yokoshihito, again, and mind you, I'm putting them in the antagonists because they're mostly antagonists through the series, but again, they're more neutral. Did a great job of creating this sort of prince that you wanted to see get the shit beat out of. and yet was able to give him a quality of sort of renownment, and sort of I'm trying to think of the word here, and I'm blanking on it. But basically, you know, you hate the character, but he there's a redemption is the word I'm looking for. as I happen to forget it, I happen to remember it. But, you know, he gave enough redemption towards the end of the series to be okay with the character. Shannon Emmerich, I think, is actually one of the best voice actors in this series because of what she did with Charles D'Artagnan. You know, really a great commanding, very serious presence to the role, but did a great job of acting out these emotions of this very unique story that really happened towards the tail end of the series. The stories of Charles, this person who fell in love with Yokoshi Hikito, and was willing to allow herself to be used as nothing but a tool just because she loved him and died for him, only to be resurrected by him. I think it's very unique, and I very much enjoyed her role. So altogether, I think the English dub cast, and mind you, I've also listened to the Japanese dub cast, or not dub cast, but Japanese voice cast, in this case it would be the sub for me, but I thought they did a great job too. The voice acting, just really top-notch in this series, at least from the English end, though. With that, let's move on to story. And wow, people, we have a lot to talk about. Let's start with our first point. Let's talk about the overall plot and theme of the series. There's several ways to look at it. One, the overall plot as far as it being a harem and ecchi series. And to an extent, it is fairly typical in the sense that, you know, you have a character that somehow is the main male protagonist. They don't do anything really unique with the sort of the ecchi and slash harem aspect of the plot. He's the male character that they all fall in love with to an extent, and you know, they all want to be with him. In this case, something that does make it unique, though, that I like, is the fact that, you know, while the two main sort of females in Sen and Yukihira, I had to keep scrolling back up to the names here. But, you know, even though they fall in love with him, they're sort of bodyguards and sort of friends, and Goto and Hattori aren't. And I like the fact that they don't become masters of him. Their admiration for Mukinara, is more admiration and respect than it is love. And it really is a perfect example of what a good harem has as far as variety. Good harems don't have every girl like the male character. Good harems have different sort of varying degrees of respect slash admiration slash like slash love with the sort of the main protagonist as far as the main protagonist and the supporting protagonists that care for that character. And I say it in that way in the sense that, again, there are harems, reverse harems, and unique harems of all time, though I guess in this case, I'll sort of use sort of the prototypical of it's a male surrounded by girls here. And again, a theme that always works in harem anime is the theme of family, and that's one of the themes, as far as the harem plot, that's not unusual and pretty standard, at least for good harems it is, because there's a few themes that the harems tend to use to sort of describe the love, and I always think that the good ones, again, the ones that have variety of these different feelings and emotions, are the ones that tend to focus more on the sort of the family aspect of family theme aspect of that plot. So in that sense, as far as a harem series, it's actually pretty average as a plot. And again, that's not a bad thing in this case, because again, what makes you enjoy the story and everything is the individual characters and, you know, how they tell their version of the story, which I think is done very, very well. And then you had the more action, sort of overall overplot, that the reason they're all being here, sort of the shadow of Great Japan. I thought the mystery aspect of that was done extremely well, because it didn't make you tune in. It was never forgotten, but it was never at the forefront, and it played perfectly as a sort of overlapping, overlaying sort of story in the background that would eventually come to the front. Because it was always there. It's something they were always talking about, but it was never being sort of... It never felt like it was being, like, hit over your head and, like, can't forget about the Shadow of Japan, can't forget about the Shadow of Japan. As much as they talked about it, it never felt like it was in your face. So that was definitely something I enjoyed as well, as far as the overall plot. And again, pound for pound, you know, again, no theme there, really. I mean, a lot of the themes are more based in the harem aspect of the plot, which we'll be talking about in just a second. But again, at the end of the day, just being an action sort of anime, and these sort of comrades, this family coming together to defeat the greater evil, it's not something unusual. But again, it's a perfect example of, yeah, something that has been done before, and it is pretty substandard. But being done really, really well and making a very good story because of it. One of the things that really makes this unique is Mukinira Akira and Yagyu, and, you know, the fact that he is very different from other male harem protagonists. And I say this because, again, sort of the prototypical harem, or at least the harem protagonist that we would see in harem and Eshi harem series from about 2005 to 2009, to an extent, they were all pretty much the same bland, you know, and I'm talking about things like Maid versus Butlers? I'm trying to remember the name. There was a hair etchy series, something X Butlers. I'm blanking on it. Strangely enough, I actually enjoy the series, but yeah, it's pretty forgettable. And some other sort of very etchy and some very harem series that are pretty much forgettable, and it's because they're all the sort of same male protagonist who really does nothing throughout the series. And it is more there as comedy relief and sort of the reason to have all these pretty girls on screen than it is sort of an overlaying story of sort of love and this stuff that you enjoy in very good harems of the past. He's different in the sense that he does take command. You know, he is more common sense. You know, in situations where he should run, he doesn't. Now, mind you, he does have sort of the fact that where he is really there used as comedy, you know, the first episode with Gisa and the whole tucking it in joke. But even in that episode, you know, there are still points to where he comes out as a fully fleshed character, you know, who understands who he is and is in command of himself. He's not the part where he just fades into the background. What makes him unique is that he is a full-functioning character of the plot. And he's there. And he gives advice. And he, you know, he has this very sort of commander-general presence that sort of fits the theme of... Not sort of, but absolutely does, I should say, fits the theme of the anime. And in that aspect, that makes him very different and puts him among the very unique sort of harem series protagonists like Negi Springfield from Negima. Kentaro Oe from Love Hina. I'm blanking on the name of the character, but the main protagonist from Princess Lover, which is a series one of the days I'm going to review. I'm trying to... some more recent that, names who I'm blanking on, but the main protagonist of High School D&D. You know, and speaking of High School the Dead's protagonist also sort of fits to where he's not just there as comedy, he steps out on his own and is a full-fledged character. And again, that's what really makes him different from other male harem protagonists, is the sense of the fact that he is someone who, again, steps out on his own. He doesn't feed into the background. He isn't just a plot device. He is a full-functioning character, which is great for the series and great. You know, this is something that was done a lot more in the past couple years for harem series. And it's what made a lot of the harem and a lot of the ecchi series very good the past couple years, is that their male characters are full-functioning characters. That's sort of their own plots and, you know, are not just, you know, placemats to be walked over. You know, it, really, that's probably the best way to describe it, is that the sort of prototypical harem protagonist is the a placemat sort of position, to where basically he is a character who gets walked all over, and it makes it hard for you to understand why these female characters are in love with this person. In this case, you know, it's understandable why they respect him, why they're in love with him, why they care for him, why they will fight for him. And again, it's a sense of family, and that is something that's a big thing that's talked about in this series. As we move on to our next point, again, we're going to be talking about this family connection. It's sort of manifested in sort of two ways. I'm going to sort of talk about the sort of deep underlying part that I feel is there. I can't confirm nor deny if it's really part of the plot or not. But again, you definitely can feel, if you know sort of what goes on in Japanese current events and sort of serious things, the declining birth rate and everything. And there almost seems to be a deep underlying sense of talk here about the aspect of Japanese sort of forming families, you know, joining a general, aka a sort of a male, you know, showing sort of females as samurais and talking about them starting families with males slash generals. You know, again, in Japan, and I've said this before, and there are people, I think they misunderstand what I'm saying when I'm saying that, you know, women have much more of an opportunity in Japan to be in better positions and that stuff. What I mean by that is, you know, there are a lot more women in bigger positions because they have a lot more opportunity to get to those positions. Or at least it seems they have a much better, and they do get in much bigger positions than women, than most women do around the world. And a lot of the evidence towards this is the aspect that, you know, part of the reason the declining birth rate is a lot of women leaving, especially women in the country, doing well in school, leaving the countryside or leaving wherever they are. And basically, from the day they get out of high school slash college, becoming career women. And basically not having time to have a love life, not having time to date, and not having time for children because they don't have the time nor the money. It, you know, children are looked upon by these women, not that they don't want to have children, but at that point in their career, as an inconvenience to their career. You know, their career overcoming their want to have a family. Again, not saying it's a bad or good thing, but it does lead, it's part of the thing that is leading to the declining birth rate in Japan. And so there's almost a sense of sort of talking about the need for more family, the need of a general and a samurai, sort of translated in, the general being the man, the samurai being the girl, you know, these more of these packs being needed to strengthen Great Japan, or in this case, the need of more families to strengthen, to have children and sort of strengthen the bond of Japan overall. I think there's a deep underlying aspect to that that's very interesting, sort of geopolitical aspect to this series that's very interesting to look at. Or it's a connection you can make that I think is very interesting, or at least for me it is. But I do think that the overall aspect is the talk of the family, sort of the master samurai, the master bodyguard slash slave slash confidant, the talk of that relationship being like a family. You know, again, Mikimura being the general, and the girls being the sort of master samurais that serve under the general, and how, as a family, they strengthen one another. You know, his sort of love and sort of trust and bond, as it's sort of said in the series, strengthens the girls, and in turn, the girls' strength strengthen the general. And it's very much like that in a family, to where the sort of trust and bond of the family strengthens each other. It makes each other better. You know, the fact that we are always there for each other as a family. The fact that we are always there to when we need a shoulder to cry on or need help. You know, that aspect of sort of connecting the sort of master-samurai relationship to the idea of it being a family, which is really a very great story to tell, and it's done extremely well in the story. It's one of the reasons I really enjoy watching this series, is that sort of master samurai connection to the idea of it being a family, and really how that influences, and is really the focal point of how the master, the general and his master samurai relationship is sort of shown in this series. You know, because they do show other sort of generals and their samurais, and as strong as they are, they're eventually overcome by Mukai Kira and his master samurais because they continuously get stronger. And it's shown no more prevalent than at the end of the series. Spoiler alert, by the way, you know, when Jubilee and Gisa have their final fight, and she and Jubilee takes Gisa into space to kill her and stop the threat of resurrection by the evil overlord that Gisa is trying to resurrect. But after the crisis and everything, you know, Jubilee comes back to is resurrected, comes back, and re-kisses Mercury and Nira and rejoins the girls. You know, that aspect of family strengthened her and allowed her to come back. It's a very unique thing that's sort of underlined on the sort of overall plot and really strengthens the plot and makes it very, very good to watch. So that aspect I just absolutely adore, and it's really what is the strength of this story. You know, as I talked about before, this I felt was one of the best animes in 2010. Probably the only animes I thought were better in 2010, to be all honest, were Hero Man, Oremo, Star Driver, and Giant Killings. This anime was probably the fifth best anime in my mind of 2010. And it just did so many wonderful things. I'm forgetting about Seto Okudomo, which is another thing. Again, I continuously am thinking of other animes that came out in 2010 that were really good. But, you know, this being probably the fifth best anime of 2010, and a large part of that was the art. But what strengthened, if this was an anime that was just on its art, you know, it wouldn't be that good. But it's got this wonderful, terrific, amazing art style that's combined with this very basic sort of ecchi harem action plot that is infused by this sort of underlying connection of comparing the master-samurai relationship and sort of showing how it's very much like a family, how each support each other. And it allows you to fall in love with this family, and you care about this family, and you care about what happens to these people. And so you combine the art with a very, very well done, solid, terrific story where you care about the characters. Really well done music. You have the fifth best anime of 2010. And it's one of the reasons why I really suggest every anime fan at least check out this series just once. Because it's absolutely incredible. And like I said, if for nothing else, check it out for the art. I really would check it out first before you check out Samurai Brides. And I'll be honest, I am kind of a bit disappointed with Samurai Brides. And it's not that sort of family isn't there in that aspect. It is actually certainly there, but there's definitely more of an approach to the more comedic aspect to the of these characters. You know, right now the dojo is on hard times financially. Spoiler alert for those who haven't seen the new series yet. And so they've sort of, I guess, turned the dojo into a maid cafe. And there's all sorts of craziness going on. Again, that sense of family is still there. And in more recent episodes, it's come out more. But there's definitely more of an approach to more comedy, which I actually find disappointing, to be quite honest. Not there wasn't comedy here, because there was tons of comedy. But there was definitely always seemed to be an equal focus and more of a focus on the action and the mystery and just the overall story rather than it just being, you know, joke after joke. I feel there's too much of a focus right now on the comedy in the new series. But again, it's only at its, I'm not going to look here, I believe it's only at its fourth, its fifth episode is going to release tonight as of this recording. It's Hayaka Ryoran Samurai Girls is definitely an anime I really suggest everybody check out. To me, it gets 4.5 stars out of 5. So that's it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you have any comments, any suggestions, or anything you want to say about this episode, any comments about the show I reviewed, your opinions about it, or anything about the site or anything you want to let me know, and of course I always read any comments on the air. And when I say I'll read any comments, I mean any actual comments, not spam. So if you're a spammer, I'm not going to read your spam on the air, but you know, if you want to sort of get your fan mail on the show, there are several ways you can contact the show. Of course, you can always email us at absolution132@yahoo.com. That's absolution132@yahoo.com. You can also contact the show by liking our Facebook page by going to www.facebook.com and searching for the Absolution Network. Like us and leave us a comment there. And of course, you can also leave us a comment on the website itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Of course, while you're there, check out all the other 132 production produced content. This, of course, includes the Otaku Momentum that you can find right here on the Absolution Network. Gene and Chris are back with Shap Plus, the anime podcast, which you probably heard in the commercials. They're back and they're doing a great job, so check them out at www.shapplus.com. Of course, the random Redbox review done by Chris Stanton himself that you can find at www.randomredboxreviews.com. And of course, my other podcasting sites, that part of 132 Productions, of course, Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast, that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. This month, we're going to be reviewing Godzilla, Mothra, Ghidorah, All Out Monsters Attack, which is probably the best movie in the Millennium series. And, of course, there's the Comic Book Crazy Podcasting Network that features Comic Book Crazy and Hexcast. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. Of course, while you're on the site, check out the sidebar of any of the sites where many of our friends are on and check out their content as well, which they could do great stuff. This, of course, includes Michael Bailey's views from the Long Box and from Crisis to Crisis that he does with Jeffrey Taylor, Brad Douglas's Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Schleicher's Major Spoilers Podcast, and of course, Scott Gardner's Two True Freaks, along with many others on the sidebar, so check them out. And that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. In all honesty, I do not know what we're going to do next week. It's going to be a surprise. So make sure you tune in next time. Same Tom Prerogative time. Same Tom Prerogative network. To find out what the next great animation I'll be reviewing is. So, until next time, my Toonami generation.
Find cover. It's gonna get too
stay
dangerous.
Golden.
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.